You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony. Alan Chews is a book critic for NPR's All Things Considered. His latest novel is To Catch the Lightning. His newest book of travel essays is A Trance Before Breakfast. Thank you for joining me, Alan.
Pleasure, Rick, as always.
We have three very interesting and I think extremely different books to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start out with Lucy by Lawrence Gonzalez.
Yep.
This is a science fiction thriller, very much in fact, I think... The premise is largely lifted from a Crichton novel.
Yeah, from Crichton's novel Next, we don't know if it's lifted or not, but there certainly is what Crichton calls a human Z in Next.
Well, there's a good deal of Crichton's DNA in this.
Yeah, well, Lucy's DNA is half human and half bonobo ape.
Mm-hmm.
So she calls herself a human Z, but... Jenny Sloat, who's the primatologist who takes her in and tries to raise her in the U.S., is shocked at that word. She doesn't like that word. But the book itself is quite thrilling. It's certainly nice to have it. If we can't have another Crichton, it's certainly nice to have Lucy because it does move along with that Crichton-esque pace. I mean, the opening is terrific thriller opening as Jenny, the primatologist, is racing through the Congo jungle as there's a Congolese army attack against the rebels, and Lucy abandoned by her father's been killed and her mother's been killed, and she finds this adolescent girl who, kind of an attractive adolescent girl who just seems to have something slightly off about her, clinging to the body of this dead bonobo ape, who, as we later learn, is her mother. And Sloat takes her back to the U.S., where all sorts of interesting and pleasant and some evil, slimy things occur. Crichton wouldn't paint the government officials with as broad a brush as Gonzalez does, but still it's kind of fun. I mean, the anti-hero is this, what would you call him? He's a veterinarian behaviorist.
Right? Yeah.
And he gets charge of Lucy on behalf of the federal government and does terrible things to the girl before the girl manages to get away from him.
The guy, I think Gonzalez does a good job. I like the way he sets up the politics, you know, the political background in the Congo at the beginning. I think that gives the book an initial pull of tension. Mm-hmm. I do think that some of his science fiction, he does trend towards the what I would call an ethical info dump, where you know, characters will kind of like step up to the podium.
Yeah.
But I think that he keeps things out the plotting well enough paced and the peril well enough paced to make the podium stops not quite so show-stopping as they could otherwise be.
Yeah, but it's terrifically entertaining. It's the kind of thing you really want to go to the movies to see or watch on a summer night.
It's certainly a book that will keep you reading late into the night.
And, yeah,
you know, it's a quintessential page turner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a good writer, and even as you say, he borrows, or more than borrows from Crichton. With Crichton not around, I'm glad someone took the job.
Now, I'll mention, too, while we're talking about not Crichton's, Warren Fay's Fragment, which we talked about last year, just came out as a mass-market paperback.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and I remember both of us liked it, and I thought that was quite a good book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's your mass market paperback Crichton-esque thriller for this summer as well.
Yeah, you know, somebody who buys that is going to be awfully surprised because it's so intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not too intelligent for the mass market readership who just wants a lot of slashing and blood and gore.
Well, there's certainly enough of that.
Yes.
I have to say, I was really quite thrilled with how happily he decimated his cast in a way I found almost shocking.
Yeah.
Who's going to be left in this book?
Right, not too many people. Hi, Crichton, where are you? Come back to us.
Yes. Well, we also have Alan First, Spies of the Balkans. Alan First is like the dean of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, he's this is his 11th version of what he calls an historical espionage novel. He wrote a couple of books before that, surprisingly,
mm-hmm.
Which I haven't read, but I guess Dark Star is the first of these historical espionage novels.
I like that description because it really captures what these are,
mm-hmm.
and the interest of them, because we, by casting this in a historical, like setting it in historical times, you get a much more, I think, interesting and vivid feel.
Yeah, I mean, he's great at atmosphere, you mm-hmm. know, details of time and place, but he also makes terrific plots.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a real sense of the military and social history of Europe, you know, on the verge of World War II in this book. Some of the other novels take you directly into the war period, but this is just on the verge. It's set in Salonika, and Mussolini has tried to invade Greece, and the Nazis are threatening to invade Greece, and he creates this wonderful character, this Salonika detective. Named Costa Zanis, who's a kind of canny cop,
mm-hmm.
who's got a lot of local political connections. He's got a British girlfriend who, not surprisingly, turns out to be a spy. So he wonders whether she's taking him to bed because of what he knows or because of what he is. Do you like me, or are you just trying to pick my brain? And he's got a mother whom he's devoted to, and a dog whom he's devoted to. And he seems like, you know, what do the French like to call him? Le moyen sensuel, just a normal guy, an average guy, whose moral hackles are raised up when he hears what the Nazis are doing. And so he gets involved in this smuggling ring, helping to smuggle refugees, mostly Jewish refugees, who've come out of Berlin down through the Balkans, and he helps to smuggle them into Turkey. And so the plot is pretty good, and just everything just falls into place so beautifully. The prose is wonderfully serviceable. It's not only compelling, it's really enjoyable.
He has a sense of detail.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really makes this book almost like a vacation during World War II.
Yeah.
And that kind of sense of detail makes it really involving. It gives it a real feel of heft, of that you're reading something that really interesting, and that whether or not it's fiction, it has, you know, the feel of reality.
I'm just going to open the book somewhere, anywhere. And, okay, here's a passage where Zanis, who's in the Greek reserves, gets pulled from his police post and sent into the mountains in anticipation of this Nazi advance. In Trikala, an ancient town divided by a river, the snow-capped peaks of the Pindus Mountains were visible when the sun came out, which, fortunately, the first week in November it did not do. The sky stayed overcast, a solid mass of gray cloud that showered down in icy rain. The sky stayed overcast, and the Italian bomber pilots at the airfields up in Albania played cards in their barracks. So it's just a wonderful mix of geography and wartime emotion, with a little ironic turn there at the end.
And I think, too, I like how, I guess, terse it is. Mm-hmm. Even though it's really involving and filled with details, he doesn't. You don't feel that you're reading somebody's historical research paper.
Right.
And
although obviously he's done a tremendous amount of historical research.
Yeah, no, he recreates a period well, but without going in. He gives you detail, but not too much detail. He gets you involved in the plot, in the characters. He immerses you in the setting, but he doesn't ever stop to lecture. And I think that's one of the things that's
right.
really nice about this book is that it really feels like a slice of life. And I guess that's in a sense what it
yeah.
is.
And I would say a greatly entertaining way for people to pick up some history, which may be mm-hmm. slipping away from the general recollection.
As is another slice of history slipping away from us. That gets covered in A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan.
Well, that's what, yeah. The book is about time's ravages. But it starts, you know, with time's ravages on the punk music business.
Right. Well, that's what's happened. The punk music business is now a slice of history.
Right.
Our children's children will study it and say, boy, I wonder if Dad did that.
Right. But this I mean, I found this to be an absolutely brilliant book. You know, brilliant. Right. I mean, there are a lot of brilliant books around, mm-hmm. okay? So-and-so is brilliant. But this one is not just brilliant, but wonderfully entertaining and mm-hmm. thought-provoking. The form of it is intriguing because she moves back and forth in time in the histories of this group of kids from San Francisco who grow up to found some bands and start punk record labels. And then it goes into the future, it goes into the lives of their children in the future. And it's got this wonderful chapter towards the end that is a PowerPoint. This is a first. It's the only PowerPoint chapter in a novel I've ever read.
I have to admit it. You know, what I like about Jennifer Egan is that she uses a lot of really interesting kind of experimental approaches mm-hmm. to literature, but she never forgets that she's telling a story
yeah.
about people, and she uses those experimental approaches in a way that really makes the story more gripping.
Mm-hmm.
She uses them to get us closer to the character so we care more. And I think it's just really wonderful because it makes these kind of turns in interesting ways that she approaches things, including the PowerPoint presentation, which is truly brilliant. It makes them really entertaining as well
yeah.
as I mean, you know, you really have fun reading this
yeah,
book.
Yeah, I mean, this is different from Richard Powers brilliance. I mean, I'm not a huge Powers fan. It just puts me off. The guy, I mean, I know the guy is smart, but I have to see that on every page. Egan really uses her really keen intelligence to create a formal approach to this material that really, as you say, reveals a lot more about the characters than if she had just presented it in a conventional way.
And I think
she's not just showing off,
right? No. What Jennifer Egan I think understands is that any of these things she uses are just tools. She's a
yep.
she's willing to use any tool in the literary toolkit, but she knows how to use these tools to tell a really compelling and entertaining story, and to make that story more entertaining, more compelling, more involving by virtue of the way she tells it.
Yeah.
The PowerPoint thing is really great. It's not a gimmick. It's a really
no. It's an insight. It gives you great insight into the mind of the daughter
mm-hmm.
of this one of the women who was a girl in San Francisco during this early days of punk rock who has a kind of offbeat life there. She grows up, works in the business, has a number of emotional problems. Eventually, marries, raises a family. And her daughter does this PowerPoint about the family that is revelatory, not just about the family, but about this characters in her life, the girls in her life.
And also about the influence of technology in
mm-hmm.
our lives. And she also, what I like about Egan, too, is that she really understands, even as she's using art to talk to her readers, she understands the impact of art in other ways on our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact of music, the impact of literature, and she, by virtue of her understanding of that, she, again, uses that to reveal her characters, create an entertaining as heck thing to read. And also to just get us involved and keep the pages turning. It's just a real pleasure to
read. Right, and
this
the appropriate soundtrack you can play while you're reading is Iggy Pop's The Passenger.
Oh, yes.
Or Fruit Fly or Blizzard of 77, something by Nada Surf, you know. Really esoteric stuff.
Yeah, well, and stuff that again, it's fun to read this because you do kind of hear that music, even if you're not all that familiar with it. You don't have to know the music to understand how powerful it is, an influence it is on the lives of the characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the great joys of reading a Jennifer Egan book, aside from her, also her prose style is really, really sharp.
Yes, she writes a very clear, evocative, resonant sentence.
Yeah, very, and chameleonic too. She can be what she needs to be, and you know, you don't ever have a sense that you don't think, oh, this is Jennifer Egan when you're reading this.
Right. No, she does men very well.
Yeah. Which is kind of shocking.
Pardon?
It's kind of shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those, Flaubert did women. Mm-hmm. Egan does men. But there's one moment. It's particularly memorable. One of the guys from that early San Francisco days becomes a trash collector along the East River when he gets to New York. Can't really make it in the music career, but he then goes to the office of one of their other friends, who's a big music producer, and they have this really odd time together in this guy's office, and the former rock musician trash collector thinks to himself, well, there's not much of a difference between Benny here in this big office, all his secretaries, and me, which is what you need to survive, I guess, if you're walking along the East River picking up trash.
Well, I also...
This ain't trash, though.
No. Long ago, when I read High Fidelity,
yeah,
my thought was that women should not be allowed to read this book because they'll get to know men way too well. And I think somebody let Jennifer Egan read that book because I think she knows this a little bit too well.
Well, you know, as my dear late friend Jim Houston, and you, whom you know well also, used to say, hey, you know, men are women too. So we can reverse that and say, hey, Egan says women are men too.
Well, whatever she is a brilliant and entertaining writer.
Absolutely.
And these are and we're lucky, you know, for all the death knells of literature and books we seem to hear, boy, they managed to publish books worth buying and reading and spending your valuable time on.
I agree.
I've been speaking with Alan Chews. He's the book critic for NPR's All Things Considered. His newest novel is To Catch the Lightning. Thank you for joining me, Alan.
My pleasure, Rick.
You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.